Welcome to Good Calls with Dean Blandino, a production of iHeartRadio. Hey, what's up? Welcome to Good Calls. I'm Dean Blandino. Another episode, episode 21. Has it been 21 already? I've been sitting across. The band is back. We're back together after a week hiatus. Travis and Joe are both here. We're in the same room.
Feels good.
I can look at Travis and make him uncomfortable.
I already am starting to sweat.
He's starting to get uncomfortable. Travis Hansen.
What's up,
producer
man?
Extraordinaire. Welcome back. Thank you. Joe Madrid, audio.
What's up?
No, it's worked. The audio's been, it's been great. So let's get into it. You know, not to, I mean, we have to talk about it. Unbelievable news on Sunday. Kobe Bryant passing away in a helicopter crash. I mean, this is one of those where it's like, I can't think of, try to think of a bigger, in terms of the NBA, like a former player other than Michael Jordan, right? Like, this is as big as it gets, and so many people were affected. You know, we all watched Kobe. The guy was universally loved. Just an unbelievably tragic thing that happened. And I know, you know, Joe's a big Laker fan, so obviously it hits a little closer to home for you. Just weird. Like, the whole thing is just kind of surreal.
It is. I was thinking about it today, and I've had some great moments watching Kobe. I remember winning the finals. You and I first met, we were watching Kobe, you know, yep. Watching Kobe, and I know you joke around about it all the time, but like,
we were wearing the full uniform.
I said you should wear it to the show.
Pretty sure I was him.
You thought you were Kobe.
But I think of some of those celebrations that I've had throughout my early 20s, and just
that's the power. You know, that's the power. Time. And that's the power of sports, right? And look, the bottom line is that we're not, Kobe Bryant passing or whoever the other, whether it's a celebrity or an athlete, somebody that we looked up to and we were a fan of passing, it doesn't affect our everyday life, right? It doesn't. Like, I'm going to wake up tomorrow and I'm going to do what I was supposed to do regardless of whether Kobe is here or not. But like what you said, Joe, we think about that person and what that person means to us because of the experiences that we've had watching that person, being a part of, you know, whether it's an actor that we like in that movie, or like you said, 2010 finals, or watching him score 81 points. It's all part of our experience. And that's what, you know, we kind of miss, right? And that's what makes it so tragic. And obviously, you know, the people that should be, you know, it's horrible. His family, he loses, not just Kobe, his daughter. There were 9 people on that, on that helicopter that their families are now changed forever. But it's one of those deals where, again, it doesn't impact our everyday life. But what it does, at least in my opinion, it's kind of when somebody like that passes, that is universally known, it kind of brings us all together, and it's a reality check. And you'll see it. You'll see it on social media with what is the message? Life is short.
Life is short.
Life is short. Anything, it can happen to any one of us at any time. And it's that reality check where we get caught up so much in our everyday lives and doing, and we forget to, you know, it's a cliche, but we forget to smell the roses. We forget to like take time to appreciate the things that we have and our loved ones and the people that we interact with. And that's what I think, like something like this, it kind of just takes us to that back to center, that kind of ground floor. And that's, you know, that's what I take from it. And it's sad. It's just really sad. And
it's terrible, man.
You know,
and being a father of a daughter, it hits you in another way, you know, as well.
Multiple times general. Throughout the day, I just like, I thought about his family and his daughter and my daughter, and I just would tear up. It just hits you, and I'm sure it was the same with you, Dean, with your sons, and like, it's so fragile, and
it is, and that's, and like, not to, and I'm like being serious, and it may, like, I think it's a time for us to all, like, I appreciate you guys, like
thanks,
I really
Dean.
Do,
thanks, Dean.
I appreciate
you too, buddy,
and you know, and just, and it's interesting thinking about the, it tends to be like these like small aircraft, right? These small, you look at some of the athletes or famous people that have passed in aviation disasters. And this is just another person, another celebrity, another athlete in that list. Like the one, I remember Roy Halladay. Remember when mm-hmm. Roy Halladay yeah. passed away in 2017. I was in New York when Corey Lytle in 2006 hit.
I knew Corey personally.
Yeah.
Actually, I mean, we grew up in the same town.
And he, you know, small aircraft, and it hit an apartment building in Manhattan. And obviously, having lived in New York during 9/11, when yeah. that happens, people, it definitely brought back some crazy, crazy memories. You know, you think about Payne Stewart, who passed away, even. And I went back and looking at a list, and some that I really had forgotten about, the U.S. amateur boxing team in 1980, 14 members of the team were among 87 killed in a commercial airliner crash in Poland. Thurman Munson, I'm sure Yankee fans remember Thurman yep. Munson. I remember, you know, I never got a chance to watch him play. I was 1 year old when he passed, but Roberto Clemente, yep. you know, Roberto Clemente was Hall of Famer, an unbelievable player, was traveling from Puerto Rico to Nicaragua to assist, you know, victims of an earthquake in that area, and passed away in a small aircraft crash. It's just pretty crazy. The list goes on and on. The Marshall football team,
right?
Yeah,
you know, the one that I didn't even realize, Rocky Marciano died in a plane crash.
Really,
Rocky Marciano? Either. Yeah, 1969. Died in a plane crash in Iowa. And then, I mean, the list of, and then non-athletes, you think about
Richie Valens.
The day the music died.
Buddy Holly. You know, there was Lynyrd Skynyrd, was members of Lynyrd Skynyrd in the 70s. You remember John F. Kennedy Jr. and Carolyn Bessette. Aaliyah died in a plane crash. I mean, there's mm-hmm. so many. It's scary. It's really scary. And it's just, again, life is fragile. And, you know, it's just one of those deals. But to kind of shift gears, and I know, like, just I feel like we need, I don't want to get too down right now. I feel right. like we need a little, like, you know who would bring us up right now is Ray Mendez. I want, like, if Ray Mendez was here, Ray Mendez wouldn't let us sink too deep into the pity pool right now. Ray would be like, listen. Look at me. You think I'm pitying myself? I just did an Iron Man. Okay. So let's go.
Get Ray on the show.
Kobe would want us to move forward. Okay. So let's do it. We are going to get Ray Mendez. One more thing. And just, I know my brother has been on the show. So here's to put it all, to put a bow on it.
Okay.
Here's my brother's take. Okay. Okay. Celtics, Pelicans. Both teams started the game opening up with a 24-second violation.
An 8-second violation.
In memory of Kobe, okay? So sad what happened, but basically a minute gone from the game. That affects the over-under.
Oh, my God.
That was his text. Oh. So, okay, if you're going to honor anyone like that, don't let it impact the betting line, is basically what he's saying.
Well, I think
that's my brother, everyone.
I think they should have canceled the games.
Come born from the same womb. We've come from the same
one of a kind, and that's great.
Mother and father. Raised in the same house. We pretty much had the same childhood.
He obviously had the over on that game.
He clearly.
There was another story I heard on my drive over here was the Mavericks are going to retire number 24, and I would guess the NBA will do other
yeah,
things.
Yeah, I think that'll be kind of a
league-wide thing.
You know, you think about numbers that have been retired across the league, and like a Jackie Robinson and things like yeah. that, and they wear 42 on certain. So maybe this is – I could see the NBA doing something like a
– Every January 26th
every January 26th, everybody would wear 24, you know, something like that. I think it's a little bit –
How do you do that with
It's hard
calling
with,
fouls,
with basketball. Yeah. Baseball is a little bit different, but
– Maybe just wear a patch for the rest of the
do
year for
something,
sure.
I'm sure. It's this is a guy, you know, even – and to, here's like the – we talked about the – just the level of people that he touched. Like my mom was heartbroken – Because, you know, Kobe spent part of his childhood in Italy. His dad played internationally. He spoke fluent Italian. My mom has watched him do interviews in Italian. My mom coming from Italy, you know, came here when she was 17. So she was just a huge Kobe Bryant fan. She was broken up about it. It's just one of those things where, again, it doesn't impact our daily life, but it impacts us in such a way when somebody like that passes, because mm-hmm. again, we all have shared, we've shared experiences with him. You yeah. know, we don't know him. We haven't met him, yeah. but we've shared experiences. Yeah. With
him. Isn't it crazy? It's a day after LeBron passed up his record.
Passed yeah. up his record.
That was wild.
Yeah. It's crazy. It's
I got a text from a friend of mine, and it hadn't hit any social media yet. And I was like, there's no way this is true.
Well, think about that. Well, Travis brought this up. Talk about the fact that, and this goes to, so TMZ breaks this story. Okay. And they break the story. And when TMZ breaks the story, it's like we didn't know if it was true or not.
Right.
This isn't like CNN. Not that TMZ has become the go-to. Yeah. They are breaking stories in sports. Okay. But it was like TMZ broke it. And your immediate thought is this real?
This can't
is
be this, true.
Is this not true? Whereas if it were, you know, the LA Times or CNN or whatever.
Fox.
If it were, then it would have been more like accepted.
If they hadn't already, they've cemented themselves as a newsbreaker in this business.
They're
always right.
My experience with the NFL, you know, with Ray Rice. I mean, you think the league, that caused so much consternation within the league office when TMZ released the video of Ray Rice in the elevator. That was like NFL security. They were trying to get this tape, and TMZ ends up with it. And it mm-hmm. and that created a lot of issues for the NFL when it came to, you know, with the domestic violence and everything else. He had been suspended for 2 games. The video comes out now, 2 games. What is that? It's unbelievable where they've come with breaking these stories. And obviously I have personal experience with TMZ sports, not
well, the point you were trying to make, what you were bringing up was TMZ broke the story before the sheriff's department was able to alert the next of kin. And that's
the hard part about, and look, this is the environment and the world that we are in today, in that with social media and all these things, you're like somebody in the family of anyone involved in that crash is going to see this, and they don't know if it's real. Right. And that has to be, that might even be worse than knowing.
Because you won't believe it. We don't believe it as fans, and family members are going to be like, I don't believe that.
I don't know. I'm not sure. Yeah. And it's like, then you have this kind of like hanging over your head, like, oh my God, I just want to know, is it true? And it's so hard. It's I don't know. I mean, I get it. Like, they're trying to break stories, but you.
Everyone wants to get it out there first. They want to be the first to break the news.
Well, yeah, and this will be one that everybody remembers. You know, everybody remembers, you know, what they were doing and where they were. And it's sad. It's sad. My 9-year-old who never watched Kobe play, and he was upset and asking about it, you know, so it's just one of those deals. So
one story I have with Kobe, my wife and I are spending Valentine's Day at Catalina Island, mm-hmm. and we walk past Kobe and his wife on Valentine's Day. We're from me to you, 8 feet away, Dean, and Kobe's right there, and I kind of hit my wife. I'm like, Caitlin, and I was like, there's Kobe right there, and she just like wide mouth looked at him and like just froze and like watched him walk by, and some other people that were like, yeah, that's Kobe right there, guys. And
that's nice, Travis. It didn't really add anything to the conversation at all.
You didn't say anything to him?
You didn't talk to him? You didn't say anything?
I know, because being a member of the media working in the sports world, I always just like, you know, I let people do their...
Being a member of the media working in the sports world, I rub elbows with these guys all the time.
I just let guys live their lives.
I just like...
No, I don't like to stop suffers either, but I think Kobe, I probably would have...
There's a level.
The thing was, my wife was so impressed.
We're
going to
do that. We're going to talk about that after the break. We're going to talk about the level of celebrity where it's legal to stop them. Okay, that we're going to do that rule, and we're going to break that down in the after the break. Let's shift gears. Let's talk Super Bowl. Obviously, Super Bowl 54 on Fox coming up February 2nd, and the Super Bowl crew was released. And I just want to talk a little bit about the crew. We talked about it last week and how, you know, historic because of the makeup of the crew and having five African-American officials on the crew. And again, and this goes toward the really the NFL. And look, the NFL is getting a lot of heat right now because another coaching hiring cycle without you know, an African-American head coach being hired. You did have Ron Rivera, who's of Puerto Rican and Mexican descent. But look, when you have a player pool that is what, 70% African-American, and you have very few African-Americans in positions of leadership, whether it's head coach, general manager, that's an issue. And so the league is taking some heat in terms of you have the Rooney Rule, which a lot of people feel is just a rubber stamp that, you know, you have to interview a minority candidate. And I think a lot of the minority assistant coaches that go through that process, they feel like in some instances that it's just checking a box and it's not genuine. But this, I think, it was nice to see. And, you know, and I've been in those meetings and I've put that crew together for the Super Bowl. And you're always looking at look, you want to put the best officials and you want it to be the best possible crew. But inclusion and diversity is certainly a consideration. And it was nice to see that. But you look at the makeup of the crew, and Bill Vinovich is the referee, and we'll get to him a little bit later because Vinovich worked a certain game that a lot of people, especially in New Orleans, remember. Vinovich working his second Super Bowl, he worked a game that Joe remembers fondly, Super Bowl 49, I believe it was, in Glendale, mm-hmm. Seattle, New England, where Joe watched an amazing finish and then got to party with the Patriots because he got on the wrong bus after the game. Got on the wrong bus. Whoops. After the game. So instead of coming to the post-dinner officiating dinner, which was lovely.
Oh, my God. You're doing this right now?
Which was lovely, by the way. He got on the wrong bus and ended up back at the Patriots Hotel and ended up being ushered into the party and was doing shots with Gronk and partying with, you know, Robert Kraft and Tom Brady and
Pitbull, Rick Ross,
John Jones. So, and while I heard the
ice sculpture was beautiful.
The ice sculpture was amazing. The prime rib was to die for. It was delectable. It was just classy. We all had a nice time. We talked about the game. The drinks were certainly, I wouldn't say flowing, but they were there. And but Joe was partying. So anyway,
hold on a second. Just to clear my name, I did send you a text saying,
yes, he sent me a text.
I'm at the Patriots after party. Yeah. I'll come. I'm on my way. I'm waiting for you.
What does a good friend say? I said, no, stay there. Yeah. Stay there.
And okay. I would have left to show my gratitude for the great week.
He was also
you
there.
You said stay there. Yes. I can't even get into that party. Stay. Yes. I said, all right, I'm here.
Stay there.
Yes. No problem. Are you sure? Yes. All right, I'm staying.
Okay. So then you've got Barry Anderson at umpire. This is Barry's first Super Bowl assignment. Kent Payne as the down judge. This is Kent's third Super Bowl assignment. Carl Johnson, line judge, former vice president of officiating. This is his second Super Bowl assignment. Michael Banks, field judge, second. Boris Cheek, side judge, third. Greg Steed, back judge, second, and then Mike Chase is the replay official, first Super Bowl assignment. So a really good crew. You know, what does that process look like? You put the crew together. This week for the officials will look like Wednesday they'll get into Miami. A lot of them will have their families there. This is an opportunity in the officiating world. When you get a game like this, it's an opportunity to give back to your family. And it's because just like players, just like coaches, officials, they sacrifice a lot, and they're away, you know, weekends, Thursday nights, Monday nights. They're in the off season, they're traveling, and they sacrifice a lot of time away from their families. So the Super Bowl is always a time when they bring their families, and the families get to spend time and to celebrate. It's the officials are there to work a game, but it's to celebrate their families. Thursday, they will have a dinner, an officiating dinner with the, all the crew and their families. And it's such a, one of my favorite events of the year. And everybody gets a chance, every official gets a chance to come up, introduce his family, say, you know, whatever it is. I used to speak at that dinner, and it was always a thrill for me to see the families and how much they were enjoying it. Friday, they'll do a walkthrough at the stadium, and the walkthrough, you will not believe when you watch the coin toss on Sunday night, how much the coin toss has been practiced. And Friday, yes. So they will do a walkthrough at the stadium.
How many times will they flip it on
Friday? They go through. I remember the Super Bowl where George Bush was George H. He was going to flip the coin. And Carl Cheffers was the referee. And he was more worried about the coin toss than the game. He was. And I was like, you're gonna stress me out because you're worried about the coin toss. And he was arguing because what we told him and what everybody we talked to said, you call him Mr. President. And he's like, but he's not the president anymore. And I was like, I don't care. Call him Mr. President, okay? Let's just get this thing over
with. Isn't that the rule? You always call former presidents Mr.
Yes,
President?
He was Mr. President. And so it was like this big thing. And he finally got through the coin toss. And I was like, okay, we're going to have a good game. But that was the Houston game. That was Atlanta, New England, when New England came back. That was a 28-3 game. So they will go through the coin toss. The national anthem, they'll practice all of that. Then the officials will have a dinner on their own with the officials union that sponsors that dinner. They'll spend time with their families. They'll have a pregame meeting Friday at some point. Saturday, they'll spend majority of the day breaking down film, looking at two teams, trends, tendencies, all of that. Sunday, they get up, they get to the stadium. It's the longest day ever. It's so long. And they're on the East Coast. It's going to be in Miami. So the game kicks off at what? 6:30. You're at the stadium at like 2 o'clock, like 1:30. And by the time you want to pull your hair out, like it is so long. And there's not a ton to do because normally officials get to the game 3 hours before. They're getting there like 4.5, 5 hours. So you've got an extra 2 hours that, you know, is not normal. And, you know, that's why you like that. You like when it's on the West Coast because the game starts earlier. It's earlier in the day. So they'll get there, but then kickoff, there's a lot of hype, but it's just another game. What I do want to talk about before we go to break is that Vinovich, he worked. What game? What game was Bill Vinovich the referee for? That we had a rule change because of that damn game.
Rams Saints.
Okay, and so there are a lot of people saying, how could he get the Super Bowl after officiating that game? Well, Bill Vinovich is one of the best referees in the NFL. He really. What I find interesting is at the referee position, he wasn't involved in that call. It's not his call. He's not involved. The two officials that were involved in that call. Patrick Turner, who was the down judge, and Gary Cavalletto, who was the side judge, neither of those officials got a playoff assignment this year.
I was going to ask about that.
Cavalletto got an alternate assignment, but neither one got a playoff assignment. Coincidence?
Yeah, I don't think so.
I don't think so. So it's just one of those deals. That's a play that sticks with you. I think, you know, quite frankly, I would have done the same thing because – if you gave one of those two officials a playoff assignment and God forbid something happened and they were involved, it would be a PR nightmare.
Right. Which they probably wouldn't have had.
What's the whistle?
Because there's like,
I just thought it was a good time to blow a whistle.
Good time to blow a whistle. But that's the thing. And those are the things that you have to take into consideration. Like, and it sucks, but are we going to have to mark this explicit because I said sucks?
I think I mark them all explicit now.
You do? All right. It sucks, but you have to make those types of decisions because you can't make these decisions in a vacuum. You have to consider all factors. And if one of those officials was involved in something controversial this playoffs, then people would point to that game and say, how could you have that official in the game? And that's just part of it. So with that said, let's go to break. When we come back, I want to talk a little Pro Bowl. We're going to talk a little MMA. And then we're going to do a life rule breakdown next on Good Calls.
It's Dean Blandino coming at you with the rules. Don't step back because he'll hit you like a fool. Don't tweet him because he'll hit you back. He'll hit you back with his fat ass sack.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Good Calls. I'm Dean Blandino. That is when we first started our theme music. Travis, otherwise known as the
what's my rap name?
He's the bootleg Eminem. Decided to rap. That was just off the top of his head. Like, that was freestyle.
It was pretty good.
It was actually pretty good, Travis. Freestyle.
I didn't know you guys were going to play it. That's
I've
great.
Been waiting 21 weeks to do that.
It's unbelievable. I mean, I would have died. You really missed out. You missed your calling. You should have been Eminem before Eminem. All right, let's talk Pro Bowl. So, look, the Pro Bowl is... When's the last time you got excited about a Pro Bowl?
I was probably 12 or 13, I would think.
Yeah, so. I can't, and I worked for the NFL for a long time. And look, the Pro Bowl has been something that the NFL, it's interesting because it was, for many years, it was in Hawaii. It was seen as a reward. It was after the Super Bowl. It was seen as a reward after a long season of these guys putting their bodies on the line, that you were honored by your peers, and you went to the Pro Bowl, you went to a beautiful location, and the game was kind of an afterthought, but it was just a reward, and you got to take your family. But what I noticed when I went to Hawaii for the Pro Bowl, and it's beautiful, and the players would stay at this kind of resort that was kind of out of the way, and you know, everything, the officials and everybody else would stay in Waikiki, and it's a great environment and the fans love it, but it became like less and less of like a thing. Like the younger players don't want to go to Hawaii. Like younger players, when we met with the PA and they talked about the Pro Bowl, where do you think the younger players wanted to play the Pro Bowl?
Vegas.
Okay.
Is that an option?
Not 15 years ago.
Right.
It's coming. Where's the draft this year?
Right.
Vegas. 5 years ago, if I would have told you the draft in 2020 was going to be in Vegas, you would have been like, no way. So that potential is coming. But the Pro Bowl has become, look, it's a different sport. It's tackle football. It's not a baseball all-star game where the potential for injury is not as great as what a football game is. So if these guys are going to play all out, you're not going to, you see guys that lose their, you know, get injured in a Pro Bowl. That just doesn't, I mean, who was the running back that played Robert Edwards? He played for New England. He ended his career, not even in the Pro Bowl game. It was the beach. It was in the beach game. And he almost lost his leg. It's scary. And you look at guys that have gotten injured in the Pro Bowl and missed time. So what does the league do? They try to capitalize on the week between the Super Bowl and the championship games, because from a ratings perspective, people are still in the mode of football. So they moved it to that week. They moved it to Orlando. So now it's not as far of a trip. What the Pro Bowl has become is now what they're doing this year, and they did it Sunday, they tested two rules, right? And so the first rule was what Denver proposed last offseason, which is the 4th and 15 in lieu of the onside kick. So if you're going to go onside rather than go onside, because a couple things. Onside kicks are, there's a higher rate of injury, and the success rate has gone down. And so they want to go to a 4th and 15 from the 25. I don't know. I don't love it. I don't know what you guys think. I just think, look, even if the onside kick is a, and I know we talked about it on the show, it was, I think, I don't have the final numbers, but I think there were, you know, maybe 8 or 9 successful onside kicks, planned onside kicks this year, and the percentage, you know, it was pretty low early in the season, less than 4%. It went up. Historically, it's been around 13%. I think just the just the idea that the onside kick is there and the potential to be recovered and to be successful keeps the game interesting. And it's not, you know, I just fourth and 15 from the 25. It's not necessarily a safer play. You still have injuries.
No, guys can get hurt.
And it just feels like, I don't know, this doesn't feel like, it doesn't feel like football to me.
Well, to me, it just seems gimmicky. You know, like, it's cool because it adds excitement to the end of the game, but it's like, if you're, what good is it? If you have a 21-point lead, you've worked the entire game to build this lead, and now all of a sudden I can lose this lead in a fraction of a couple seconds because they put in this gimmick rule.
And then you think about just the complexity of it too. Like, what about fouls? What about, you know, now,
yeah, like you throw a
now
deep
you're
bomb.
Fourth and 15, there you get a pass interference, and now it's a first down or a hold or an illegal contact, and it's an automatic first down. You know, offside, and then you're gonna replay the down if they don't make it. You're extending the game. I just, again, I get it. I get why Denver is proposing this. And I know John Elway is a big proponent of this, and I have a lot of respect for John. I know John very well, and he's on the competition committee. I just don't think the support is there for this right now. We'll see. The other rule, which we've been through this, is they were going to not call false starts on flexed receivers, so a wide out that flinches. They're going to be lenient on that, and I get the reason why. They you don't want a lot of pre-snap fouls. You don't want a lot of those because there's no action. They delay the game. They increase the downtime. But to me, look, just hold your water. Don't false start. If you fall, because now you're going to relax on a receiver who flinches, and now the defense jumps, and you're going to have to call it. You know, are you calling it on the receiver if the defense jumps? If the defense doesn't jump, you don't call it. It's very hard to be consistent. We've done this before, and what we learned was it doesn't work. It just, in my opinion, it doesn't work. A false start is a false start, and you can't kind of devalue the fact that the offense moved, and that can create an advantage. It can create a disadvantage. There's a lot of things that can happen there, and I think that it would be a mistake to go forward with that in the regular season. Thoughts on that? No, nothing. You guys are just
no. I agree. Like you definitely see to where it would be a disadvantage to the defensive back who sees the guy, and then he's waiting for the call, but the call doesn't come, and now he's looking at the official,
and the
waiting for the flag. The guy goes past him and beats him for a touchdown.
Well, it's like the indoor football league or whatever. They go these ridiculous running starts.
The Canadian Football League has that.
Is that
that would be Canada, Joe? Yeah. It's country that is north of the United States. It's
whatever
our
it
neighbors
is.
To the north, which they're
yeah, they get that huge running start.
Lovely people. I love Canadians.
I've never been.
You've
never been to Canada?
No, Canada's I've been wanting to go to Montreal. Though.
Montreal. Type
Vancouver's
of
great. Edmonton's awesome.
It's beautiful.
Winnipeg, Brandon, Manitoba.
Travis knows way too much about Canada, but that's beside
drinking the point. Age was 18 and 19 when I was in college in North Dakota, so we'd drive up there.
Oh, that's right.
It was great.
North Dakota thing. All right, so that's the Pro Bowl. Let's talk a little UFC. You know, McGregor and Cowboy, what do we think about that? I want to hear your guys' take on that first, because I have my thoughts.
I think it was fixed. I'm just going to go
it's
out.
Funny.
I'm just going to say it.
It's
I think
funny
it was fixed.
That I don't think it was fixed, but I do think it was as fixed a fight could be before the fight started. He was the perfect opponent. The reality is that the UFC, they need
Connor to win.
They need Connor to be relevant. They need Connor to be relevant, okay? They don't need him necessarily to go 10-0 in his next 10 fights, but they need him to be relevant. And if he would have lost that fight, his next fight, he's no longer. That means his last win was against Eddie Alvarez in 2016 or whenever that was. He's going back away, so he has to be relevant. And I think Cowboy was the perfect opponent because he's a name. He's been one of the most successful fighters, one of the most exciting fighters, but it's like a boxer when their button has been pushed too many times, his chin is gone. Like his chin is gone. He was going to go in with the mindset of if I'm fighting Conor McGregor and I have any kind of a ground game, I'm going to take him down, right? Khabib is he showed like I'll eventually get him to the ground, and then he's in my world, and he's a fish out of water.
But Conor's got a better ground game than most people
think. He does have a better ground game than most people think. But with what Conor, you have to survive the first onslaught. You have to survive that first minute and a half, 2 minute onslaught. And if you can survive that, then now it starts to tip in your favor. And you've seen it. You've seen it against Nate Diaz. You've seen it. Obviously, Khabib, those longer fights. And so you survive that, and he's not the same. But Cowboy was going to go in, and he was going to stand. The thing that bothered me was the shoulder strike.
I didn't even know that was legal. That was what I was going to ask
But the
you.
Shoulder strike, like, I get it. It's unexpected. But, you know, I saw two different takes on it, on the shoulder strikes. I saw Michael Bisping talk about it, and he said it's just an annoyance. He said the shoulder strike is not, it's like a foot stomp. It's like, stop doing that. And then I saw Chael Sonnen talk about the fact that he didn't expect it, and it was one of those, like, when you don't expect it, that can take you.
Well, it did break his nose, and Chael pointed out that Conor has like a bone that protrudes out of his shoulder.
Yeah, his collarbone or whatever it is, the clavicle. It was predetermined without being fixed that Conor was going to win that fight. They just had the deck was stacked. And because they need him to be relevant. And now it opens up all the possibilities. What do you want to do? And I love Nate Diaz. Nate Diaz was weak as after the fight. He tweeted it out. I love Nate Diaz.
Yeah.
So, you know, could you have a third fight with Nate? Do, you know, Masvidal, which I think would be a mistake. You know, you could have a rematch with Khabib, which I think will end the same way. But it just opens up all those doors. And
that's why I think it was fixed. There's so much motive for that, for Conor to win that fight.
Yeah.
And also the way, I mean, we've seen Cowboy look, and he's good. He's a great fighter. And the way he lost that fight to me is just like, eh.
Well, there was no, I mean, there was
he
no
dropped
resistance.
His hand
there
was as no the resistance. Kick was coming in.
I don't think it was fixed. I don't think he took a dive. I just think that was the opponent. It was the perfect opponent for him to come back, have an impressive win over a guy like that, and now, again, the opportunities, because he's the cash cow for the UFC.
I agree with you on that. Like, watching it, not being like a huge UFC MMA guy, like, I thought it was a cool fight. Like, I didn't think for a second that it was fixed. I'd never even thought about it until you guys mentioned it now. So as kind of an outsider to watching this,
how many
sport,
Cerrone fights have you seen before that one?
I don't think I've watched any. Yeah, just, so I don't know the guy.
Travis, if I grab you and hit you with my shoulder, how many times are you going to let me hit you with my shoulder before you move your head?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'll probably once.
I think he's done. I think he is. You look at his past, you know, I don't know what the record was, but he's lost like something, you know, four out of his last five fights, whatever it is. He's been stopped in a couple of those. And I think he's just, it's time. You know, this guy has been through wars. He kind of, you know, when you think about a boxing equivalent, and I think about somebody like Arturo Gatti, you know, and you think about the wars that he has been, like Mickey Ward and those types of fights, and you can't do it, you know.
He had some of the nastiest knockouts too, man. He was he's a great fighter, and he says he's still going. So
yeah, I just hope it doesn't turn out, because seeing Chuck against Tito, and that, like, he and I get it, and meanwhile, you know, that's a guy. Chuck Liddell's story, you know, Chuck and Jay Glazer are close. I got to hang out with Chuck through Jay and got to know him, you know, a little bit. And we went out one night in New York, me and Chuck and Jay, and he's a Dodger fan, Chuck, and I'm a Dodger fan. And it was the night that the Dodgers hit back-to-back-to-back-to-back home runs to win a game. Okay. Wow. And it happened to be on at the bar we were at, and he punched me every time they hit a home run in the arm. And the first one was like, they're coming back, and he punched me, and It was like, you know, the first one. And then the second one, it was a little bit harder. And then they hit back to back to back home runs. And the third one was like, okay, ow. Like that, no, that like really. And then they hit another one. And I was like, I had to like get ready, like get in a position. And he punched, and I was like, you dude, stop. Like you knock people out. You're punching me in the arm. I'm not going to be able to move tomorrow because you're an ass. And, but yeah.
I'm surprised Glazer wasn't hitting you on the other arm.
No, that was the
time.
Night we met Mickey Rourke.
Right. And oh,
Jay,
I remember.
Jay told the story. Yeah. We met Mickey Rourke and I was sitting in a nightclub at 3 a.m. with Chuck Liddell doing cartwheels on the dance floor, eating grilled cheese sandwiches, drinking mojitos with Mickey Rourke, Jay Glazer, and like three other random people. I don't know who they were. It's so amazing.
You could hear all about it on.
It sounds like True Hollywood Stories with
True Hollywood Stories.
Charlie Murphy.
Yeah, exactly. But let's talk about. Let's do a little life rule breakdown. And so, Joe, you wanted to talk about like
celebrity, like celebrity sightings, and how do you?
What are the rules?
What are the rules around
sightings?
Yeah.
And what?
Because you were on a plane the other day. We got
so I was on a plane, and this was the question. I said, "Hey, I'm sitting next to a." I didn't say former player, but I said a guy who's played for both. I'm flying from Houston to L.A., and I'm sitting on the plane next to a guy that played for both the Rockets and the Lakers. Can you guess who it is? And Scott, who works with us in the studio, he guessed Trevor Ariza, which is a good guess.
That was a good guess.
But I said, it's not a current player. It's a former player. And then Joe guessed Big Shot Rob. So who's a legend? I mean, this is a
legend,
guy that's won. He won championships with the Rockets and the Lakers. But I didn't feel compelled to. I have a very high tolerance, and so I'm not like Travis and in media and whatever. But I have a very high tolerance for celebrities, and there's a very small list of celebrities that I would actually approach. Robert Horry. While I was a big fan, I didn't say anything to him. He's not that level.
That's like Kobe to me. I didn't say anything to him.
Because your level's higher than my level. But at what level and how many people, let's come up, Joe. You have three people. That's it. You have three that if you see, you would go up to. If all you could have is three, and I say, Joe, you're going to meet these three people, who are your three?
Wow.
A lot of pressure.
Well, I could tell you that when I was the Super Bowl party that
let me give
at.
You okay, but let me give you a name and you tell me yes or no.
Okay.
And then you can go into. So if Cristiano Ronaldo.
I wouldn't even know who he was.
Okay. So that's you're not he's got the most Instagram followers of anyone.
I wouldn't
in the world,
say anything
by the way. But okay.
No, I wouldn't
so
say
so most
anything.
Famous
I'm not a soccer fan.
Most famous athlete. In,
that's
in
fine.
The world.
Michael
that's
Jordan,
fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Tiger Woods.
I think Michael Jordan's one I think I would have to
okay,
go say
so,
hi
so
to.
We would all agree, and I would agree, that Michael Jordan would be definitely one.
Yeah.
That
that's probably why he doesn't go out in public anywhere.
I think Tom Brady's probably up there. Joe Rogan, for me, I think I love Joe Rogan, man. He's like the Oprah for dudes.
I would approach Joe Rogan because I feel like Joe Rogan and I have a lot in common. So we've both done stand-up. We both host very successful podcasts. And we've both been on TV.
Yeah.
And we both like MMA. So I feel like me and Joe Rogan are kind of,
mine are different. Yeah, mine are different. Like that whole Super Bowl week I was there, we saw every football player. I didn't say anything to any of them. Saw John Jones. Like, I got to say something to John Jones. When I used to live in Malibu, we'd see actors all the time. Didn't care. Saw Hicks and Gracie at sushi one time and about like, oh my God, that's Hicks and Gracie. So I'm just,
if you could pick three, like off the top of your head, who are the three that you did? You
definitely Michael Jordan.
Something to.
Would have been Kobe for sure.
Okay.
Probably DC, man. I'm a big, big Daniel Cormier fan.
Really?
Yeah. I think he's a good
dude. We could introduce you to him at the studio.
I think he's just a good dude, yeah.
Okay, that's good.
For me, I got to put some of the models that I loved as a kid, like Cindy Crawford and Kathy Ireland. Like,
so
but,
good,
but I know, but how do you?
So
I, what
good.
Do you even have to say to
you're
those people?
You are so white. You're so white.
But like for me, it's like I have to have like a line. If I can think of a line instantly, like I've met certain coaches and celebrities and things. Like there's if you have a line that you're like, okay, I got a good one liner to open with.
You told me a story. Who was it? You had like a line. You said something to somebody, a corny line.
Yeah, it was like Chuck Pagano, I think, and he had coached at the University of Wyoming. We went to school there, and he went through all the leukemia stuff. And I went to him and I said, you know, your story is really impactful. It really has touched me. I all the stuff you went through with your leukemia, but all of it you were able to live through, but you went through with the University of Wyoming and you played the football, something like that. It was much better delivered when I said it before. He started laughing right away and said, he's like, oh man, you must be from Wyoming.
Special needs kid that is coming up to me right now. Like what?
You actually, I have my third one. Elon Musk.
Yes. I want to be there when Joe meets Elon Musk, because that conversation is going to be like, oh my God. I'm trying to think of mine. Like I would certainly, if Michael Jordan, I would say Marvin Hagler would be one for me. I would love to meet Marvin Hagler. That's a guy that I, you know, have loved for forever. I'm kind of like weird in that I want to meet George R. R. Martin, you know, the Game of Thrones, like, right? Because I have so many questions for him because I've read the books and like I'm kind of a geek when it comes to that stuff. And so I was like, I don't want to talk about the show. I don't want to talk about the show. I want to talk about the books. When you're going to finish the next book, because I've been waiting since 2012 for the next book, and just so many questions. So I would definitely say something to him. And then I think I'm madly in love with Emma Hewitt. She's a singer. She's from Australia and she's not like, she did rock. Now she's like, does like more, electronic trance. And I love her. And I just have this fantasy that I meet her on a plane and we fall madly in love.
And I had to Google her. So everybody else who's listening, that's definitely looking up.
All right. So what are the actual rules to when you meet a celebrity? Like, what's the approach?
What are the rules? I think if they're with their family, if they're eating dinner, you don't interrupt them. If they're sitting somewhere and they feel like they're not doing anything and you're not interrupting something, I would never approach anyone who's, even if they're with somebody else and having dinner, I think that's rude.
So they have to be alone. Rule number one.
Alone or like not in the middle of something. Like okay. I just, for me, the one rule for me is just don't interrupt their dinner. Like, don't go up to them in a restaurant. Like, you're trying to have, you know, and again, you're at a certain level of celebrity, you probably can't even do that. But,
sure.
The other person for me, Brad Pitt. I feel like Brad Pitt and I, Brad Pitt and I would be boys. Brad, if you're listening,
I'm sure he is.
Like, we would be, I'd be like, oh, guys, hey, what? No. Brad's VP. What's up, dude? Yeah. No, I'm just doing the show. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good calls. I told you. It's on.
Can you put it on Twitter?
I'm doing my fake talk with Brad Pitt. Listen. No, it's good. It's on iHeart Radio. I told you. You didn't. Just download it. Whatever. Yeah. You want to go get? Yeah, let's go get some beers. All right, cool. All right, guys. We got to hurry up.
All right. Okay. So there's the Brad Pitt call.
Yeah.
I think a rule should be no creepiness with the ladies, Travis. Sorry, bud.
Yeah,
that's fine. I get that too.
Like, you, a calendar view on my wall.
No, but Travis, I could see you being not trying to be creepy, but coming across as extremely creepy.
Well, and that's the thing. I would never approach them, but but
you'd make it like really awkward.
I would do my best not to. Yeah,
but it'd be unintentional. Yeah. Like you're like one of the most genuine, nicest person. Like have such a good heart, but you would make it so creepy unintentionally.
That's why I would never say anything. I've learned as I've gotten older, just like not approach or talk to those kind of people. Like Kobe was with his wife. It was Valentine's Day. I don't want to mess around, like go and talk to him. And like, it just wouldn't have been right.
All right. There's the rules.
All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll wrap up. We'll do Brandon Blandino. I want to talk about sequels. I watched a movie the other day. I think two is better than one, so we're going to talk about that next on Good Calls. All right, we're back on Good Calls. All right, so I was watching TV the other day, and Wayne's World 2 was on. And I watch a lot of movies. I know Joe doesn't watch movies. When do you have time to watch movies? Well, you know, when I relax at night and I decompress, I want to watch a movie. And so I really enjoyed Wayne's World 2. And I just watched Wayne's World 1, and I like Wayne's World 1, but I think I enjoyed Wayne's World 2 more than Wayne's World 1. And I wanted to express that and share that with you guys and get your thoughts.
I was a Wayne's World 1 fan. I think I like that one better. I haven't seen the second one enough to say that it holds up as much as the first one does.
Joe probably hasn't seen either. He's too busy doing whatever the heck he does.
I think I've seen Wayne's World once in high school, maybe.
Okay, he's too cool for school. But
I just don't watch movies.
So I think for me, Christopher Walken, I think Rob Lowe's great in 1. I think Christopher Walken is great in 2. Kim Basinger's in 2. I love Kim Basinger. I think the scenes with her and Garth are hilarious. Wayne's World 1 does have a great scene with Alice Cooper when they go backstage and they talk about Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, you come to Milwaukee often? And Alice Cooper gives him like a history lesson. He's like, wow, the French settlers have come since the 1600s. Milwaukee, the good land. And so, but in 2... I think there's just the scene that clinches it for me is at near the end when Wayne is trying to stop Cassandra's wedding to getting married to Christopher Walken. And he stops at this gas station, and the gas station attendant's like an older guy. And he's like, where's the First Presbyterian Church on Gordon Street? And the guy's like, Gordon Street. I once knew a girl and on Gordon Street. And Wayne, like Mike Myers, stops and he's like, really? Can we? I know this is a small part, but could we get a better actor? And they move the guy out of the way, and then Charlton Heston comes out and like crushes it, like crushes the scene. And he's like, oh my God. So I don't know. But I think maybe it's just I like Wayne's World, and if I could combine 1 and 2, they're both good movies.
You dressed as Wayne's World for Halloween this
year,
didn't you?
I did. I dressed as Wayne.
Great memory.
Yeah.
Thanks. Well, it was only a couple months ago. It's not that great. Let's do some Brandon Blandino. Let's do a couple, Joe.
Let's do it. Caucasian rattlesnake.
Caucasian rattlesnake. I was at dinner with, I have a 9-year-old and a 4-year-old, and we went to dinner. And so we play this game where you start with A, and then you go around the table and you have to pick an animal that starts with the letter A. And you keep going until you run out. So the person that, if you can't guess an A, you lose. And then we go to B. So we were on C and we were running through all the C's. And then Luca, my 9-year-old, he's like, Caucasian rattlesnake. I was like, not a thing. and he's like, no, it really is. Google it. But all I can think of is like this rattlesnake that's wearing like
a sweater over his neck.
and he's wearing like Docksiders, and he's on a yacht, and he hangs out with Travis. Like, that's all I can picture.
White rattlesnake.
Rollerblading and like so white. Like just that's all I can think of. Like yachting.
When you Google Caucasian rattlesnake, white rattlesnake comes up.
No, it's a thing. And so that's all.
Wait, hold on. You couldn't come up with cow?
No. We had gone through so many C's. Like you go around the table.
Oh, you keep going C's until somebody
can't get.
So we were running out of C's, and he said this Caucasian rattlesnake, and I just had this vision in my head, like, you know, like doesn't against universal health care. Like I just had this whole like thing.
Got a Trump flag.
Yeah, it was like, you know, MAGA. It was just like just this rattlesnake in my head. But anyway,
that's a good one.
What do you
got? I didn't know where you were going to go with that.
I have no idea either.
All right, do another one.
Yeah,
let's do another one. Rick Springfield is kind of a dick. Do you know Rick?
Oh yeah, no. So Rick Springfield. So
now I definitely have to mark it.
So Rick Springfield. Rick Springfield's famous song is what?
The one. Never gonna give you that
no,
one?
No, that's Rick Astley.
Oh, I knew it was a Rick.
No, you got Rick rolled, but no, it's Jesse's Girl.
Okay.
So Jesse's Girl. I was listening to Jesse's Girl, And I'm driving and I'm getting angry at Rick Springfield because listen to the lyrics. Like, he's a dick. Like, listen, pull up the lyrics.
I wish I had Jesse's girl. Okay.
That's Mr. Steal Your Girl?
Jesse's his friend. Okay. And he's fantasizing about his friend's girlfriend. And it's not like their relationship is bad. Like, Jesse and the girl, like, they're in love.
Jesse is a friend. Yeah, I know he's been a good friend of mine.
I know.
But lately, something's changed.
Yeah.
And then,
go ahead.
And that ain't hard to define. Jesse's got himself a girl, and I want to make her mine.
Yeah, keep going, Travis. Go.
And she's watching him with those eyes.
Yeah?
Yeah, and she's loving him with that body.
Can we just do a segment of Travis reading lyrics?
Travis,
go.
That's enough.
Continue to read. Keep going.
And he's holding in her arms late at night. You know,
I wish I had Jesse's girl. So does that
sound
like...
We can't sing it because then we're...
Does that sound like a bad relationship?
No.
Does that sound like anything wrong with their relationship?
No. Sounds like they're in love.
And here he is, like, wishing that they break up and that he could be with Jesse's girl. Like, I get it. I get it if they're in a bad relationship and he doesn't treat her well.
Right.
And you're going to be the one that the white knight to save her. But that's not, like, that's bullshit. Is what it
there
is.
Should
That's
be, homewrecker bro, there's got to right be there. Rules against dating your friend's exes.
We can talk about that, but still, that to me and Travis, we are going to do that every show where you're going to read lyrics, song lyrics. That is the funniest shit I've ever heard. Give me another one. Give me another one.
That's the best. Another song.
Another Brain of Blandino.
Another song. All right, one more. Guy in hoodie riding bike at 4 a.m.
Okay.
Tells you something about neighborhood.
Not even about the neighborhood. Here's the thing. I saw a guy. I was going to the airport. I forget where I was, but it's not important. The city's not important. The who the guy is, I don't care what black, white, Asian, race, doesn't matter. Okay. The guy riding the BMX bike at 4 a.m. is up to no good.
Grown man on a BMX bike.
Pyramid. Period.
Pyramid?
Pyramid. Period. I saw this guy at 4 a.m. riding a BMX bike. What is he doing?
He's not dressed in, like, Peloton gear?
No. It's a BMX bike.
How old was the guy? Was he a grown man?
It's like a grown man.
It's stolen then, right?
There's nothing. You're not doing
anything
good.
Hold on a second. He could have gotten a text, WID, on my way.
What's
you know,
WID?
You never know, man.
No, you're up to no good at that time.
Dude could have been on Tinder swiping away, finally got the love connection. I'm on the bike.
On the BMX?
I have a friend whose boyfriend does not have a car. He rides his bike from Silver Lake to Hermosa Beach.
Is it a BMX bike?
Why is it?
The bike is not built for long distance.
It's built for tricks.
It's not a 10 speed.
Taking off jumps and
it's not
rail sliding and things like that.
No, you're up to no good. I'm sorry.
That's fair. So did you saw this man?
Yeah, I was going to the airport, forget where I was. I was driving and I saw this guy and I'm just like, he's not going anywhere productive. Like, he's not doing anything that is going to help society in any way. That's just how I felt.
Judgy, Dean. Judgy.
That's what I do.
So the rule is you can't ride your BMX bike at 4 a.m.
No, you can. It's just you're up to shady shit.
It reminds me of the movie Rad. Remember Rad from the 80s?
No, different. I'm talking about it's the bike is the key.
The BMX. Remember Rad, though?
I remember Rad.
From the 80s?
I remember Rad.
It was a great BMX movie.
How many scenes happened at 4 a.m.?
None.
They're riding their bikes. Thanks.
All right.
All right. This has been Good Calls with Dean Blandino. Please follow me on Twitter at Dean Blandino and Instagram at Dean.Blandino. Follow the show on Instagram and Twitter at Rules Podcast. And be sure to rate our podcast on the iHeartRadio app and on Apple Podcasts.
Good Calls with Dean Blandino is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.